Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Mad Yourself a Man.
A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of the Madman
and talk about it.
So excited for all of you to join us for another fucking episode. Sorry. Another episode of Swears and Cares. An episode with the five P's: pens, pencils, pussy, profit, Pringles. And we would love it if you gave us 5 stars in a review and, you know, maybe mentioned on the review how.
Did you just eat Pringles?
What's that?
Did you just eat Pringles? Why did you have, why was that? Why was that in your head?
It was literally the first P word that came to my mind that wasn't one of the ones that Lane says in this episode. Mention how much you love the intros to this show, the way it just goes on and on without almost ever talking about Mad Men. Give us 5 stars, please do that, and join the Patreon. And you can comment there too on individual episodes in Spotify. You can also leave comments. We got this one comment that made me feel kind of good.
You're a house cat, you're very important, and you have little to do.
Well, actually, we have a lot to do because we have a lot of Mad Men left to talk about.
You were going to do the one where she says, you know the process, I shave you, and then we go in for a low enema.
Yes, I was considering that as well. Mm. Listen, there's a lot of clippable moments in this episode. So give us a 5-star review. Patreon.com/Ruckus. Listen to us every week, not talking about Mad Men. Okay. Talking about season 3, episode 5 of Mad Men, The Fog, with a wonderful special guest. This guest, you have seen him on such things as Pod Yourself, a Gone to Sopranos podcast, Pod Yourself, The Wire, a The Wire podcast, Mad Yourself, a Man, a Madman podcast. And now he's here with us again because he's the producer of this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, it's Brent Flyber.
Yes, look at me. I am the guest now.
Yes.
I'm here. Yeah, I'm talking on this one. Look at me.
Look at me. I am the guest now. Brent, so glad to have you back on the podcast talking.
Thrilled to be here.
Mm-hmm. We love to hear from you, not just for when you interrupt for a beautiful segue to commercial break, but we love to hear your thoughts about Mad Men.
Great, because I'm full of them.
Good.
Who's going to do the interruption this episode? Do we figure that out?
Do we have to draw straws?
Oh, okay.
Well, I got a special guest lined up.
Okay. Oh, a special guest to
I can't back
us.
That up.
Okay, fuck. But, you know, it doesn't really matter. Maybe we'll do it on our own like adults, Vince.
Mm, okay.
I'm just
sounds
saying.
Sounds good. I
we're
like full, it. It sounds
we're
like a
full grown.
Plan. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll do it great. In fact, Brent, at any point, just make us cut to commercial.
All right, I'll do that.
You have free reign. But Brent,
hey guys, let's stop for ads.
Okay, well guys, you've heard enough of this podcast for a while. Time to talk about fertilizer and joining ICE. Speaking of those types of ads, what's your favorite ad, Brent?
I think my favorite ad, I don't remember if because I've gone through a couple of favorite ads, frequent guest. But I don't know if I've mentioned the Orbitz Dirty Mouth Clean
yes,
It Up ads.
The girl, yes.
Girl She's... who says, lint liquor. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I thought you meant the British girl. Who's like,
well, it is the British girl who says, dirty mouth, clean it up. And, of course, there are sexual connotations that I don't.
What?
I don't dislike those.
Are there?
But, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Because
your mouth,
how.
Sometimes you can use your mouth for sex stuff.
Oh
you should
God.
Try it.
I'm going to.
But it's weird because she's British and British people don't do that.
Right. They say that's the French way, and they don't like the French because of their storied history of war.
They're like, tongues? Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
Tongue. What are you, a frog? Is that why they call them frogs?
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Oh, my God.
You put your bleeding tongue back in your mouth unless you're trying to catch flies like some frog.
Frogcast@gmail.com. If we are correct about this, is this why they call them frogs? Because I've never known.
It's not why they call them. Well, you're not serious, right?
Name another reason. Because
they eat frogs. It's easy.
Well, that's not it. Why would they call them frogs? They call them frog eaters.
Because people are not like that clever when they come up with nicknames usually. It's the same reason you call a German a kraut.
Because they eat kraut. Okay.
Because they eat kraut. It's not complicated or
deep. I thought it was because they kind of sound like they're croaking when they talk, when they're like, oh, mama, man.
Yeah, and they have, the balloon under their gullet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was because they use their tongue when they kiss.
Exactly.
Yeah, it sounds like a frog.
Sort of froggish. Yeah, I like the Orbits lady.
But there's one where it's people swearing at each other, but it's just a very creative fake swear words. She says, you lint liquor. And that's still a thing I'll say to people.
Lint liquor is really good because it does sound. Well, here is that commercial. It's the famous lint liquor commercial of Orbits for us to hear.
Gosh,
you son of a biscuit-eating bulldog.
What the French, Toast?
Did you think I wouldn't find out about your little doo-doo head cootie queen?
Who are you calling a cootie queen, you lint licker?
Pickle, you kumquat!
You're overreacting.
No, Bill, overreacting was when I put your convertible into a wood chipper. Stinky McStink face!
You Hoboken.
Fabulous. New Orbit Raspberry Mint cleans another...
Man, I gotta tell you right now, you guys are just listening to this commercial, I'm watching it, and lint licker lady could... get it.
You'd let her lint. You'd let her lick your lick.
Me, young. No, I would eat a whole wet bucket full of lint just to see
just
where it
to
ends
see
up.
Where the laundry is.
Oh, but this is not a podcast about licking lint until you get to the laundry. No, this is a podcast about Mad Men, and we of course cannot start the podcast without playing the theme song. Woke up this snow. Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chose a madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Mad man. Mad man. Mad man. Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else. This is once again from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 5, The Fog. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of this synopsis?
Betty has hallucinations of her dead father as she delivers her baby. Pete considers trying to sell the untapped Negro market to a reluctant client, and Peggy begins to question her future at Sterling Cooper.
That's right. That is the synapses. And my synapses are firing, wondering what's happening at the time the episode came out.
I bet you would wonder that. You know why?
Why?
Because people watching period pieces, sometimes they wonder about that period context. And we try to put some of that back in with a little segment that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
That's news. Today we're going... That is the news. We're going all the way back to 1963, specifically September 13th, which is the day this episode aired in 2009. Obviously, we're going back a lot further to the swinging 60s. And...
with a little thing we like to call the news machine.
I wipe my ass.
Just keep going in a circle.
Forever.
The time
machine.
Back and
forth forever.
Some of the headlines we're looking at on this day include U.S. to win in Vietnam, says JFK.
Good. Yeah. I was thinking it would be bad if they were in it to lose.
Yeah, we shouldn't go over there just to surrender.
Yeah. You know what? I'm starting to think that maybe they weren't in it to win it.
President Kennedy hinted strongly Thursday future U.S. assistance to South Vietnam will be limited to activities directly related to winning the war against the communists there.
Okay. Wouldn't it?
What helps us to win the war, we support. What interferes with the war effort, we oppose, Kennedy told his news conference. Kennedy said any action by either government, apparently meaning Vietnam or the U.S., which may handicap winning of the war, is inconsistent with American policy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, this is really like nothing is happening in this article.
It's crazy. I think the Vietnamese people and ourselves agree. We want the war to be won and the communists to be contained and the Americans to go home.
Wait, that's a real quote?
Yeah.
We can all agree on one thing. Winning is better than losing.
Yeah, that's
I talked it over with these Vietnamese fellows. They also want to win.
We have one message to the North Vietnamese from the South Vietnamese. We win, you lose.
In the Boston...
I got some John Wooden quotes I'd like to read to you.
Save about that accent.
Winners and losers.
Save that accent because we're going all the way to Boston for the Boston Globe.
Oh, hell yeah.
Madam New meets Ted, Madam New meets Ted, does all the talking.
Well, so first of all, TED Talk. That's a pun they would have made.
Yeah, that's where they got this.
That's a pun that they would have made. Mm-hmm. Second of all, Madam New, where's something borrowed and something blue? Not as good?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Do you know back in the day they spelled it Vietnam, like two words with the N capitalized? Not one word.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
And what would prompt us to change the official way in which we do that?
Some sort of war, I assume.
Yeah, probably
that
conflict.
That was part of the... Yeah, okay. That was us showing the separation between the North and the South.
Yeah, yeah. There is no Nam. There is only the United States of Vietnam.
There is no I in Nam, only an I in Viet. And that's why we are going to separate the North from
the
South.
I've got eyes, too, looking at two separate directions. One eye in the past... And one eye towards the future.
That's pretty good. South Vietnam's Madam
Nguyen. I love that his eyes are weird. Mm. No one ever talks about
Ted
that.
Ted Kennedy's?
Did he have wonky eyes?
Dude, JFK had like one weird wonky eye. And
we're talking about
it.
Ted in this one.
Oh, whatever. I'm sure he also had a wonky eye. That whole fucking family's inbred.
Mm-hmm. Vietnam's Madam Nguyen Dinh Nu. Lunched with President Kennedy's younger brother today, and she did most of the talking.
Uh-oh.
She gave him her opinion of her family's regime's dispute with the White House over handling Buddhist opposition, a diplomatic source said.
Hmm. I'm interested in what the difference is there. Like, she's, I assume, South Vietnamese.
She's South Vietnamese. She's like with a part of the regime. They were cracking down on the Buddhists, and
right. And she's I don't understand why we don't just let them set themselves on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The senator took notes in a big black book while the attractive Madam Nu talked between sips from a glass of tomato juice. In a pause,
I love the attractive.
Yeah, they always have to include.
They always got
to
be like, she's hot, by the way. You'd fuck her.
In a pause between the lobby chat and lunch, Kennedy told UPI that he and his blonde wife were invited to meet the controversial Madam Nu, a recent critic of his brother, by New York Republican Congressman Catherine St. George. Quote, ooh. She discussed at length her side of the picture, said Senator Kennedy, after the 90-minute lunchtime talks. She wanted to talk to me, Kennedy said. She wants to talk to everyone and everybody. God, these Kennedys give terrible quotes.
I just found a picture of Madam Nu.
Did you? Yeah, she hot? What do you think?
Fucking super hot.
Mm.
Ridiculous. Mm. Ridiculous. Like,
How many buckets of lint?
Yeah, dude, all the lint. God damn, lint liquor.
Here's one with direct relevance to Mad Men from the Miami Herald. Widow of smoker sues for $250,000 damages.
Mm.
A widow whose husband smoked 3 to 4 packs of cigarettes a day for 27 years sued the American Tobacco Company Thursday for $250,000 for his death because of lung cancer. In a suit filed in U.S. District Court, Mrs. Dora Lantau claimed that her husband, Harvey E., a construction worker, developed cancer from smoking. He smoked Lucky Strikes.
It's toasted. Uh-huh. Toasted his lungs away.
Starting in 1934, she said, then switched to Herbert Terryton cork tips and finally Terryton dual filter cigarettes. He died September 12th,
1961. Yeah,
that sucks. How do you even have time to smoke four packs?
Well, you used to be able to
just
smoke while you worked. Now you got to take a break if you want to have a cigarette.
But how are you smoking that much when you're doing construction? I guess all the asbestos probably keeps it from...
Yeah, it helps with the asbestos issue.
Yeah, it keeps the asbestos keeps you from lighting the thing on fire with your cigarette ash.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I thought you meant people are like, oh, God, I'm inhaling all this asbestos. Quick, give me a cigarette.
Well, I was doing both jokes. I was trying to.
Oh, that's fun.
Uh-huh. Elsewhere, apparently there's a mystery person sending people money. Windfalls keep on coming.
Oh,
Dodgeville,
shit.
Wisconsin.
Mr. Beast?
Yeah.
Mr. Beast Senior, please. Mr. Beast is my father. Call me Mark of the...
The mail, which has brought money to Southwest Wisconsin from an unknown donor, now carries requests from all over the country for some of it.
Oh, I thought it, like, now the money is coming in with requests. Kill the president.
No. Whatever you give me, it will be appreciated, wrote a 70-year-old woman from Monroe, Louisiana. Mm. A 14-year-old girl from Pawtucket, Rhode Island, put in a request for $6.98 plus tax to buy shoes for school. And a man in Escondido, California, asked enough for a little cabin near a river. The requests are addressed to the local newspaper, the postmaster, and those who already have shared in the windfall. They're destined to go unanswered. The giveaway started with an August 22nd mailing from Dodgeville. Plain white envelopes, none bearing a return address, each brought $100 in bills to 30 surprised recipients. Many of the beneficiaries were widows, several aged and alone. Most recent receiver is Mrs. Rush Watson, a widow who is secretary of the public school in Barneveld. Her $100 gift carried this partial return address, Mrs. Harry L. Madison, Wisconsin, and a penciled message that said, "Silence is golden."
That,
This is the Unabomber's nice brother.
I was going to say, yeah, the Unigiver. the silence part is weird. Like, don't.
Yeah.
That makes it seem creepy.
Yeah. Right. Here's some money. Snitches get stitches.
Wait, shut the fuck up. Take the money and shut the fuck up.
You stupid. You stinking widow. Close your mouth.
You come over. You took
the
money.
You're gonna get spiders.
But you talked. I read it in the paper.
You close your mouth. You keep that tongue away from the flies. What are you, French?
You fucking lint licker. That is fun though. I'd like $100.
Sure, yeah.
Well, that was like $1,000 back then.
Dude, yeah, should we put ads in the paper asking for money? I could use a G.
That
yeah.
would be fun to put an ad in the paper just going like, give me money. What are you doing with it?
What are you gonna do with it?
I think I need dental work. I'm afraid to go to the dentist. Give me $1,000 and I'll go to the dentist.
Trust me, I need it. All of them hurt.
Finally, one last story. This is a good one. Khrushchev may yet get to see Disneyland.
Aww. Oh, hell yeah.
San Jose, California. Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev may get to see Disneyland after all, thanks to a San Jose city councilman. I feel like that's not going to...
San Jose, California?
Yeah. Khrushchev was denied access to the Southern California Amusement Park in September 1962 because of security reasons. Several months ago, Dr. Joseph Pace, vice mayor of San Jose, wrote the Soviet premier asking him if he would like to see a film entitled Disneyland USA. Dimitri...
That's okay, so...
That's not
He's going to be like, well, we didn't let you into Disneyland, but here's a movie about
it. But I made a documentary about how much fun I had at it. The whole time you're just flipping off the camera. Oh, I bet you wish you could eat all of this caramel corn.
Oh, too bad you're a commie. No Disneyland for you.
I'm eating Captain Hook. Oh, what are you doing over there? Building brutalist buildings for the peasants?
Hardly a churro to be found.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you should have thought about that before you killed God.
Dmitry Muravyev, first secretary of the Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C., said a showing of the film could be arranged for Russian audiences in Moscow. Pace, who left Tuesday night for a goodwill tour of the Soviet Union, contacted a Walt Disney spokesman in Los Angeles. He said the film would be sent to the American embassy in Moscow immediately. Yeah, very nice. Hey, cool. I know we kept you out of Disneyland, but would you like to show a propaganda film that we made to your citizens for us?
Yeah, can you show it to every man, woman, and child in the USSR just so they know what possibilities lie with, abandoning communism and joining
us
in the capitalist.
I think it worked, though, because didn't it was Kim Jong-un's brother who got barred from Euro Disney, one of the North Korean premiers or relatives thereof had a thing with Euro Disney.
Right. Yeah. I think it was definitely someone in the family who now they were barred from it. They weren't allowed to go, or did they go?
I'm trying to remember the story. I'm looking it up. Kim Jong-il and his son, Kim Jong-un, used fake Brazilian passports to travel to Disneyland.
I love that. I mean, sucks for everyone else who lives there who doesn't get to do that. But at the same time, I'm glad they got to experience.
Sorry, it was in Japan? Disneyland, Japan? No.
Okay.
It's so funny. When you started this story about,
Tokyo Disney, sorry.
The San Jose guy who is like, oh, I'm sorry you didn't get to go to Disneyland, but we got a Marine World. You want to go to Marine World? you just come to San Jose, and we'll take a bus up to Vallejo, and we'll go, Six Flags Marine World. San Jose does have a theme park that has the Top Gun ride. What is the name of that fucking theme park? Anyone know?
I don't know.
The Top Gun ride.
Is it a Six Flags park?
It might be Top Gun ride. I gotta look it up like a fucking idiot.
Sorry, it was Kim. I was still looking at the story. It's Kim Jong Nam, who was Kim Jong Il's oldest son, was caught sneaking into Japan on a fake diplomatic passport so that he could visit Tokyo Disneyland.
Ah, okay. So
it was a Brazilian passport.
No, I think that was just a hoax. I think that was a.
It's called California's Great America, and it's in Santa Clara.
And I remember that place. I've been there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've fucking been there. It's not called Top Gun anymore. Now it's called Flight Deck. I have a feeling it's because Top Gun is, owned by not great America. Anyway,
what a great segment we do here.
Oh, every week people clamor for not Mad Men on this Mad Men podcast.
We should probably cut that down. I don't know.
No. Hell no. Never. So before we get started, guys, I have some exciting news. The Draper D story this week was not done by me.
Oh my gosh.
Brent, can you explain?
Is this a debut of a hot new parody artist?
Yes.
Yeah, new guy on the scene. I made the song. I was watching the episode.
Hey, Weird Al, it's your cousin, Weird Marvin.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was inspired. I was telling Matt, I was like, let's see if I can do this. And writing the lyrics were easier than I thought they were going to be. Every other part of it was harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But I couldn't help but notice that Don was feeling a little hot for somebody.
Hit it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, man, I said. Wait a second, man. What do you think Sally's teacher's gonna look like this year? Oh, whoa! Better stop that scream, man! Better don't you see him? Uptown girl with some food. Maybe God should go to hell! admits. Prison guard having kids just like him.
Okay. I gotta say. You hit me up and you go, Matt, how do you do auto-tune? And I was like, oh, it's easy. You just find the key and, you know, you do it. You sent it. I love the auto-tune in it. It's, you can listen to the full episode, the full song at the end of the episode. I love it. Brent?
Yeah.
Round of applause.
Thank you. Do you also feel insane every time you're recording the vocals for those?
Every single time. It's like one of those things where I am, it's like, it makes me grateful. It's one of the reasons I built a soundproof studio.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I used to do it just like in whatever room. And I, like in my mind, Francesca was watching me going, what are you doing?
Her pussy getting drier by the second. Yeah.
I was doing it at my desk, which is just kind of in the I was doing it at my desk, which is just in the living area in my apartment, and my roommate came home right in the middle, and the look I gave him when he walked in, he was like, what are you doing, are you jacking off? And I wanted to say yes, like that seemed less embarrassing.
You're like, no, it's art. I'm doing
yeah
art.
I'm doing art.
I'm recording a parody Van Halen song about Mad Men. Thank you.
Yeah. What are you doing with your life, idiot? That's what I would have said. That's what I always said to.
Yeah.
You can listen to the full song at the end of the episode. Okay. Finally, it is time for us to talk about The Sopranos. No, this is Mad Men podcast. Vince, let's talk about The Fog. What did we think about The Fog?
Oh, The Fog. They got that pea soup.
That's right.
I wouldn't call this a great episode, but not because it isn't entertaining. I find it very entertaining. I enjoyed Don's weird interlude with the prison guard and Pete's discovery that Negroes can also buy things.
Right. He's shocked by it, but in a non-racist way.
And also shocked that businessmen don't want their products associated with things that black people buy.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's an entertaining episode. Feels like more of a great setup for future classic episodes than a classic episode in its own right. Just because I don't think we know what these storylines mean yet. There's Dawn walking out of the hospital and sort of the prison guard kind of avoids his eyes. I wasn't sure what to make of that. And mostly I feel like we know that Betty's going to die because she had a dream where her mom was mopping up blood and Medgar Evers was there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, she is going to die eventually in the world of if Mad Men continued. But I don't know if it's what is the word? Harbinger. I don't know if it's a Jim Harbor of like of things to come necessarily on the show, but then again, it's been a while since I rewatched it. Maybe I forgot. The Brent, what did you think of this episode?
Oh, also, there's a Chekhov's credenza that I feel like is gonna.
I know. What did they do that for? You think that's coming back?
I hope so.
I hope so too.
It's like the Pine Baron's credenza.
Oh yeah, I thought it was. I thought I had a lot of fun watching it, but yeah, it's definitely not one. There's some that when you're rewatching, you're like, oh yeah, I remember this one. This is not one of those. That's a lot of connective tissue. I think the whole storyline with the prison guard is maybe my favorite. Prison guard, one of my favorite one-off characters.
I totally memory hold him too, but I liked him a lot on the rewatch. Yeah.
I thought he was a fascinating character. Mostly because he so desperately wanted Don to ask him about his job.
God, he wanted to talk about being a prison guard so bad.
So bad. Like, it's so funny the way in which when finally Don, you know, relents, he's just like, oh, I fucking knew you were going to ask. I fucking knew it. I have those clips.
Left work this morning. I've been here all day. I'm so bored. I even called in. Like, the prison can't run without me. I'd like to have a gold watch one day, but I can't, you know? You don't want to have anything on you like that. Would they attack you? I knew it was just a matter of time before you start with the questions.
Like, geez, fuck you. I've never, like, that is, the amount that he was like begging him to ask him about his stupid fucking job. Oh, it was so funny. Yeah, that's a great character. In terms of what I thought about it, thank you guys for asking, by the way.
What did you think, Matt?
Oh, a little too late, I believe. I kind of agree with you guys. It's definitely not like a standout episode of Mad Men in terms of you kind of memory hole sort of the whole thing. It is the beginning.
I forgot they had a third kid.
Yeah, yeah. To be honest with you, the fact that they had this whole like pregnancy episode, I had forgotten about. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there is a very Sopranos-esque dream sequence in this episode. And
that's why I'm sad Dave from Dopey, who was originally supposed to be our guest, he's not here, and he so loves dream sequences.
He does. Had many a fight over this. and
I didn't mind this one, but whatever.
I mean, it's not that I minded it in particular, but I will say I have a tendency to sort of tune out when someone is doing an art right in front of me.
Yeah.
And you know,
We can already like do the symbolism. Like you're giving us a story that we sort of attach our own metaphysics to already. Like you don't have to start it with the dream. It feels like a hat on a hat.
Yeah, and it's like also you know. It's just raw, uncut symbolism with dream sequences. Mm-hmm. So they're almost written like, here's some fun gobbledygook. And it's like, I don't need this. This doesn't enhance my understanding of any of these characters. It just kind of, they always feel a little bit self-indulgent. Like yes. It's a fun thing to film.
Mm-hmm. And write, because like, I don't know if you guys took a bunch of writing classes in college, but it's fun to write a dream sequence and to be like, it doesn't make sense, but it does.
Yeah. I can tell people that I know the Hebrides are not a mountain range.
Yeah,
a series of islands.
Oh, and then all of a sudden Tony Soprano's teeth falls out and his high school coach gives him a birthday cake.
And Medgar Evers is there.
And Charlie Kirk is there. And Yoda is there.
By the way, do you feel like they covered Medgar Evers very thoroughly when we were kids? Because mentioned Medgar Evers, and I was like, wow, I feel like I remember every detail of that one for whatever reason.
Mm-mm.
I don't remember. I think I get Medgar Evers confused with. Because around this time, you know, they talked about him, the kid who was accused of catcalling and was killed, was lynched.
Emmett Till.
Maybe it's because you're younger and they were going.
Yeah, maybe so. Like for me, I had to like Google Medgar Evers, and he was a civil rights activist who was killed in Jackson. He's like
He got killed by Byron De La Beckwith. I remember the guy who shot him because he like later ran for office, and I think like his slogan was like his aim is true or something like that. Something
Jesus
referencing
Christ.
The fact that he killed Medgar Evers.
Ugh, you know, nothing has really changed all that much.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I didn't know exactly who it was. And they had like during the episode, they were sort of playing the news story around. Like you can hear it in the waiting room at the hospital. Like you can hear like news coming from the radio. And I think they're talking about Medgar Evers being killed. I just don't need a dream sequence. I thought it was a fun wind up. I thought that was the best part, was when the nurse is giving Betty the sedative and then slowly starts, you know, turning into a dream sequence. I have that.
I don't want another doctor. I want my doctor.
Sit back. You're at 5 centimeters. That's halfway from here to the Hebrides and other mountain ranges, which we are currently studying in Chapter 12. The doctor will be here and there.
Hebrides are islands.
Honestly, though, the way that nurse talks when she's talking about Hebrity Beberty or whatever, I was like, I'd like her to read me some books.
Did I say, so is his campaign poster said a straight shooter? I don't know if I said that right the first time.
Yeah.
You didn't say it like that, but that's also bad. I hate that.
Still bad, yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, I got the gist of it right.
So it's
yeah.
like if Kyle Rittenhouse ran for Senate?
Yeah,
is that...
which I'm sure
oh,
he
it's
will.
Way worse yeah. than that. Because, like, Kyle Rittenhouse, sure.
That's true, yeah.
But it's like this is a... I mean, on you know, it's like if James Earl Ray ran for something, you know, mm-hmm. for after murdering Martin Luther King. Or, I'm sorry, if it's like if the FBI ran for something. but yeah, it is all in all pretty, you know, low-key forgettable episode, but still a lot of fun to watch. Love watching Pete be just kind of like clueless and mm-hmm. kind of...
trying to be upright. Like, he's trying to yeah. be such a good guy, and he's such a dope, and it's sort of beautiful.
It is. That's,
'cause I didn't even read it as him trying to be a good guy so much as him trying to be good at his job.
Yes.
Yeah.
In a way where he's like, I don't care if you're not white. Like, you have money.
Yeah.
You know, let's get it, you know?
He does represent this very, like, I don't know, pure capitalist, where he mm-hmm. is like, you know, for him... like racism is only bad because it hinders the free market, you know? So like for him, he's like, and also, you know, I think they kind of give his character a little bit more dimension in terms of his sort of New York upbringing. Like they, mm-hmm. you know, rather than sort of flattening every character on the show as kind of just like, you know, the same type of racist. He is, you know, he's a different type. He's yeah. younger. He's, you know, grown up probably with some, like, you know, liberal elitism for sure.
Well, even he's not the scion of like the Southern planter
no.
economy. He's like a Northern industrialist
yes.
kind of rich person.
Right. So he, you know, there's that, you know, there's that sort of smugness to him. I think that is like, you know, of course, you know, I am better than those savages in the South. But also, you know, he doesn't understand, like, he doesn't believe in racism per se as like a systemic issue. He's just like, I don't know, I guess some people are assholes, but I'm not,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know? So like the scene he has where he's talking to Hollis, who's the elevator operator, in which like he does not understand Hollis's like reticence to like get into a conversation about black people buying TVs, because mm-hmm. he's just like, I don't understand why you can't just answer my questions. Number one, can I touch your hair? Number two, where did you buy your TV? Like,
yeah.
And he's almost offended at him for yeah. not knowing, like, just flatly that he's good. Like, Pete is the type of person who says reverse racism a lot in, like, you know, 2020, yeah. right? But yeah, let's talk about this episode. Let's go through it beat by beat, arc by arc. We start with the opening. This is Dawn and Betty meeting with Sally's teacher, Miss Farrell.
What do you? So what are your thoughts on Miss Farrell?
She's a drunk.
She's a drunk. Okay, because my initial read on her is like she's just too much. Like I think as yes. an actress, I feel like she's doing too much in every scene that she's in.
She is. She's glowing in every scene, and I mean that in a way where it's like she literally, I can feel the like the heat coming off of her vagina in every scene, and it's like I kind of think it's incredible, to be honest. Like it is she is a lot of fun to watch because mm-hmm. she is so hot. But
I just feel like acting wise, like she's she's overdoing it, in my opinion. But
well, she's definitely coming on strong.
I guess she's coming on strong. I guess that's the idea.
Yeah.
But like even in the first scene, like she's just like every reaction to the things that
yes.
Dawn and Betty say in the teacher's meeting, it's like it's big. It's like, okay, why is she reacting this strongly to everything they say?
That kind of made sense to me because she's a person who interacts with children all day long.
Yes.
I feel like that's what happened. That's like that's how you talk to kids. Like she still talks to adults like they're kids, kind of.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because she's telling Dawn and Betty that Sally got into a fight with this basically some fat girl who Betty calls a bruiser.
A bruiser.
And she's asking about, like, is there anything going on, you know, at home? And Betty brings up that Jean, her grandpa, died.
Oh, nothing. Just her best friend in the world just died.
Yeah. And she, the way she reacts to that is to, like, kind of like she, like you said, it's big. And she, like, touches Betty. She's like, oh,
she
my God.
She reacts like her grandpa died.
Yes, exactly. And there was that. And then there was, you know, after she says that, you know, oh, did she go to the funeral? And Dawn says, no, graveyard's no place for a child. Again, she acts big. She's like, oh, I'm such an idiot. I'm such a hot little idiot. I'm such, oh, I'm so stupid. Like, she, there's something about her that when I was watching it, my first reaction was, oh, she's very much like talking to parents like she talks to kids. All this, like, empathy, you know, and fucking radiating that kind of, like, you know, whatever. But then I was like, oh, she's drunk. I think she's drunk there. Just like she's drunk in the other scene with her in
I could see that. Yeah, I didn't know whether to interpret it as, oh, she's used to talking to kids, so all of her reactions are big, or she's used to acting like in porno movies. And
I think she's drunk. I think she is. I mean, listen, she may not actually be drunk, but what she is she could be drunk on horniness, because she is so. She's doing a really good job in the first scene, at the very least, of, like, not ever saying anything that could be interpreted as, like, coming on to Dawn. But just in the way that she, like, looks at him and looks back, it's like she's, like, covering her tracks. There is something about it that is just so, you can read it so well without it ever being actually spoken. And I was, like, pretty impressed with that. But, you know, obviously, you know, Vince sometimes, you know, hates women or whatever, so I kind of get it. And then later we get a phone call from her where she is clearly drunk. In fact, they, like, did a lot of Foley with the clinking of ice.
Yeah, well, she's holding her scotch up to her forehead for some reason, which is a weird thing to do, because it's like, okay, you're cooling down your forehead, but you're warming up your drink a little bit there. Like, don't you want
to... Right. Like, there is a painfully horniness to her character that feels almost uncomfortable, where I'm just like, I get it, but you got to just go jack off and read the paper.
Go Jill off somewhere,
because this is painful. And yeah, that phone call itself is just like, I mean, it's useless. Like, it exists only so she can essentially tell Dawn that she
is open for business.
Oh, I wonder if they're trying to draw like a parallel between her and Betty, because, like, a lot of the Betty dream sequence that we'll talk about later is about how she's still kind of immature and still responds to things like a child. Like, are they trying to show her, like, because it's the way that she's calling and standing, it's very like middle school girl calling her crush. Like, I don't know.
I think there's something there. I think she's, like, embarrassingly open with her feelings, whereas, like, Betty's so not in. Betty's so
waspy
and used to burying hers that she doesn't even, like, understand them herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the phone call, I mean, they make this really kind of obvious contrast between the two when Betty finally calls out for Dawn. And here's the phone.
Mr. Draper?
Yes?
This is Suzanne Farrell, Sally's teacher. I'm not interrupting dinner, am I?
No.
Call and apologize about our meeting this morning.
Why?
I guess I can get a little caught up in things and lose perspective.
Oh, God. I'm caught right now in this washing machine. Help me. Help me, Mr. Draper. I'm stuck in a window pane.
I don't know why I'm calling. I'm embarrassing myself.
No, you're fine.
If there's anything I can do.
Dawn?
Bets!
Dawn!
Dawn! Yeah, it's like, it's very, in that moment, you know.
Like an air raid siren.
Yeah. And, like, listen, any of us married who are either on this podcast or listening to this podcast who are men. men. No, I mean, we've all been there. We've all, heard the call from the other room, and it is like an air raid siren. It's like, just text me. I'm just trying to think my thoughts. Sorry, I'm yelling at my
just
wife.
Just trying to have non-sexual phone sex with a daughter's teacher. Yeah, leave me alone.
I wish it was something as cool as flirting for me. I was just like, I'm watching Hannibal! I'm watching it again! I like watching Hannibal. It's a good show, but it's stupid. So Mrs. Farrell calls and whatnot. And then also there's the stuff between Lane and Dawn, I think, is kind of just like gets lost in this episode. There's not really much happening. Lane is just...
I like, you really feel for Dawn because you can, like, mm-hmm. he hates this guy. And I feel like mm-hmm. he is everyone who's ever had an annoying boss. Like, the boss is coming in, making everybody do like a whole meeting about how they're using too much paper and paper clips, and Dawn's mm-hmm. just like, I don't need to be here for this. See you later.
Yeah, and not just paper and paper clips, but let's get the list, buddy.
Pencils, pens, pads, paper and postage. Pennies make pounds, and pounds make profits.
Oh, I don't want to talk to you this way.
I mean, this way.
It's too alliterative.
It's too alliterative, exactly. Too much alliteration. Yeah, his, like, insistence on, trying to cut down on anything that starts with a P in the office in which there's an expenditure is very funny and also quite useless, like, narrative-wise, at least in this episode. Although, like you said, there is sort of this mystery credenza that I guess we're going to have to be on the lookout for.
Yeah. And what happened to the credenza? Did somebody have sex on it? What's going on?
There was a conspiracy.
Yes.
I love that he uses the word conspiracy.
Yeah.
He's talking about stolen office furniture.
Yes. Also, he says a credenza, and you're like, okay, I think I'm going to have to go look up.
Oh, yeah. No, I Googled it.
I don't know exactly what this is.
Type of desk. That's it. I mean, as far
credenza
as,
conspiracy.
As far as I can tell, it's like it's a desk with drawers. I mean, I guess it's also a dresser. I don't know what makes it credenzi, but maybe it is mostly a drawer.
You know, it has to have credenzability.
It does. It does have to have credenzability. Oh, is that Brent?
Yeah. Hey, it's me. I'm popping in because we need to take a break for ads.
Oh, my God. Guys, we all need to go and figure out the mystery of the missing credenza. And while we're doing that, you should listen to these ads. But stick around. We'll be right back.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
And we're back. It's Imagine Yourself a Man. And we're here with Brent Fliberg, and we are talking about this episode. So the first half of this episode, there's like two halves essentially. One is Dawn and Betty, having a baby, and we're gonna talk about that first. This I thought was a really, even though not my favorite, didn't stand out, it doesn't stick out in my head as a Mad Men thing. I enjoyed watching a 1960s birth happening. Mm.
Yeah, I was like, wow, they get to sit. They get to lay down on a couch. That's a crazy thing.
Yeah, the way in which, like, the men were literally only expected to drive their wife or baby mama to the hospital, and then they were like, okay, time for cigarettes and magazines while your wife almost dies.
Go to the scotch room while we do the doctoring.
We'll take you to this room that's nicer than any room I've ever been in.
Exactly. And and meanwhile, I mean, the contrast is just so funny because you're seeing, you know, Dawn and this prison guard having these, like, getting drunk, having these deep conversations, hitting on, like, teenage nurses, buying cigarettes from the cigarette vending machine, and then cut to Betty, who is in a, like, half Demerol stupor. And yelling at the nurse.
I was like, are they like, is she going to be able to give birth if she's asleep? I didn't know how that works.
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, I don't know. You tell me, Vince, what was your wife's birth of your son like?
There was.
You were there, right? In the room.
I was in the room.
Did you first see there come was, out?
No, I didn't. I purposely didn't watch the part where it came out because I've heard bad. I've heard people say bad
Italians
things
about that. It's like what? It's a thing that Italians say.
Oh, it is not. No one in my family told me that.
No, it's an Italian thing.
No, it is not.
Francesca told me. She said in Italy they say, "Don't look at it. You'll never be able to look at it again." It will change for you. That's how they say.
Is that how it worked for you?
No, it made me love her even more. I was just like, "Ooh, yeah, you could fit a whole baby." Sorry, I love you.
I mean, mostly I remember because they don't give you like you're in this room, and I was at first it was the labor was like 18 hours. And listen, I'm not comparing like having to sit on a weird chair for 18 hours.
I mean, depends how much back pain you're in, though.
Fair.
As someone who has a fair amount of back pain, I was like, maybe stop your whining so much, my wife.
it felt weird because it's like a chair that sort of folds out but doesn't really fold out. Like it's the most uncomfortable
chair like they build
in the world. And I felt like they did that on purpose.
Yes,
like, I think they did it partly out of spite. It was why did you do this? Why wouldn't you just
daring
have a regular,
you to complain?
Yes.
Why wouldn't you just have a regular chair that folds out, not one that like folds out 3/4 of the way but you can't really do anything with anyway?
And then something the size of half a window seat where you're supposed to sleep in, and you know, meanwhile your wife is treated like a princess. She's getting drugs. She's got a bed that moves up and down, and I'm just like, I'm here too.
Yeah, we were in there for like 3 days. It was like at least 3 days.
That's crazy.
On this stupid little chair, and that's
That must have sucked for you.
Yeah, it was great.
But yeah,
not comparing, but it wasn't great.
No, I mean, hey, listen, but at the very end, you know, I mean, here's
a contest.
When they have the baby, all of their hormones come in. They forget how bad it was. Not us. Mm-mm. We remember. Mm-mm. We never forget. Mm-mm.
And because we're not in that room with other dudes, there's a male loneliness epidemic.
Yes.
Have we thought about how this is maybe connected? That's...
I mean, it's hard for me to imagine not getting to hold the baby after it came out, because that is such like a vivid memory, and like, you know, getting to see like a child that just is like fresh from the womb, you made
alone,
hot out the oven, like that, you know, that is a moment that you never forget. And it'd be weird to just be like, I was in this room with this guy I just met and we were drinking scotch
and then a baby came out.
And then
a stork came and delivered. I don't really know. My wife was in the ICU for a week.
So there's a really interesting moment in there where this guy's like, you know, he's sort of the sensitive prison guard, because clearly he enjoys beating the shit out of prisoners on the one hand.
Yeah.
But on the other, he's like very jazzed about the idea of having a kid. And he's so sort of jealous of Dawn for having a boy. Like, oh, do you throw the ball around with him? And Dawn's like,
not enough.
Not enough, because we've never seen him do that with his kid.
I don't think he's ever done
and
it.
Instead, he goes straight to seeing a car ad in a magazine and pulling it out and like folding it up. It's like, oh, this is a good ad. I need to.
Yes.
Like, he can only do advertising.
Yeah. He's not built for thinking about anything else.
So it's funny because it's like half of this episode is him trying to explain to Lane, like, hey, creative work is not like other work, you know. We gotta watch movies and drink in the office, and be bored and fool around. And then on the other hand, mm-hmm. he's also never off the clock. Even when he's in the hospital
right.
waiting for his child to be born, he's still thinking about advertising.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I mean, it's like that's kind of the curse in a way of having a creative, you know, job, right? Is that like, on the one hand, you're like, oh, you know, this is, of course, if you're getting paid to do a creative job. Most people are not. On the one hand, it's like, oh, that's nice to have a job that makes room for the creative process, which includes like drinking and fooling around, stealing credenzas. Mm-hmm. That's sick that, you know, someone's going to accommodate for that. But also, a lot of the curse is never being able to live a single moment outside of like the process in which you're mm. like, oh, how can I make this song about eating butt? You know, that's my curse. But yeah, I liked the
taking an ad with a butt out of a magazine to be like, okay, this is gonna inspire me later.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep this.
Just drawing lum across it with a Sharpie.
Yeah,
gonna save this.
Going into the office, you know, with the Kodak carousel, and just every slide just says lum. But yeah, he's having these like deep conversations with this prison guard. They're getting progressively more and more drunk. And, you know, you talk about the scene where he finally gets out, he gets Betty out and he sees him, the prison guard pushing his wife in a wheelchair. And like they have this weird moment where he like averts his eyes. I think mm-hmm. that's because he cried in front of him. Like, he felt really weak in that moment.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because, like, you
I
know,
wasn't sure in the moment.
Yeah, I think because it's like, you know, his whole job is, like, being tough guy or whatever. Him talking about his job as a prison guard is so funny because he's begging Don to ask him about it, but mostly because he wants to tell everyone he knows that it's, like, well, I'm sort of a god amongst men. Yeah. I control the power of life and death.
He's kind of walking around like, hey, everybody's jealous of me because I'm the king of the world in Sing Sing.
Yeah, exactly. People don't know. What you don't know about me is I can legally kill a guy. But yeah, so I think.
Make them play baseball. If they're good, they get to play against the Yankees.
Yeah, and I choose. I'm sort of like a little king. But yeah, you know, Don is not really all that interested. He's just kind of letting him talk. Meanwhile, Betty's dream sequence, a lot's happening and nothing's happening. She's wandering around the neighborhood. She's holding a caterpillar, because remember what caterpillar turned to butterfly. She's like, you know, also the caterpillar, very Sopranos coded. I was like, oh yeah, just like Ralph had on his head in the one dream sequence. What I liked was the little in-between moments where she'd wake up. You know what I'm talking about? Like, she would, like...
Or she starts screaming at the nurses.
Yeah, just be like, why fucking my husband? Like, yeah. Like, I thought that was... I was like, I want more of that, less of, like, talking to ghost Grandpa Gene, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever. It doesn't matter, but I just... the contrast is just very funny, because she's in there... like literally suffering, and the same thing also happens with the prison guard. You only get updates about his wife from the nurse who keeps popping in, who, by the way,
Lisa Simpson.
Yeah, Yardley Smith. And I gotta say, it is jarring to hear Lisa Simpson in
she's
anything.
Just kind of a jarring character in everything.
Yeah, I mean, she's great. I like her a lot, but that voice is just always Lisa.
And mm-hmm. to me, she's always seems like a strange little person who tells you that the poltergeist are around.
100%. Yeah, here's her.
Joseph Waddell.
I'm Dennis Hobart.
That's good to know.
My wife, Pam. Pamela Hobart.
She's fine. The baby's breech. We're calling in a specialist.
It's just like... Okay, so I was listening to a collection of Stephen King short stories on Audible, and Yardley Smith did one of them. And I was like, oh, cool. And I got maybe a minute in, and I said, I literally can't do this. It's Lisa Simpson telling me a ghost story.
Mm.
I like Lisa Simpson. I like ghost stories. Together, it just wasn't working for me.
Actors are in different things, Matt. I know that's hard for you to accept, but they play different roles. They're just doing make-believe. She's not actually a cartoon.
I don't know about all that, but okay, I'll take your word for it. I'm just saying that, like, Lisa Simpson should not put on a human suit and pretend to be a nurse when she is she's a little fucking girl, Vince.
Yeah, that's true.
She's been a little girl for 40 years.
I was, like, surprised at how young she looked. I mean, this is 2009. I mean, I guess it's not, like, that long ago. It's a while ago, but it's not that long ago. Like, The Simpsons have been on since, like, 1990 or something like that. Like,
That's crazy.
I expect her to be, like, 85 years old by now, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, but she's there. And I like, you know, it's always fun when you see a Simpsons person pop up. You're just like, hey, that's from The Simpsons. Anywho, Betty wakes up with a baby.
Well, I like first that she's mad that her doctor, she wants to see her normal doctor, which is like Dr. Aldridge.
It's Arliss. Yeah. $2 signs.
And then the nurse that she hates is like, you know, we've got Chaim Moskowitz, the head of obstetrics. And
she's
Betty's
like,
no Jews in the womb. No yeah. Jews in the, no Jews near my baby.
Yeah. She's going to take the money. Yeah.
She'll steal my baby's blood and use it for his matzo.
Matzo. Yeah, it is very, very funny how much she doesn't want anyone but her waspy doctor. But she wakes up eventually looking like trash, and, you know.
She looks so young. I feel like when her hair was messed up and she was, you know, like meant to be waking up from her, 24-hour fog, drug fog.
Yeah.
Like you really realized how young
the actress
she looked.
Was.
Yeah, the actress was. In a way that she doesn't usually.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, she for sure.
Like without her Grace Kelly hair, you're like, oh, this could be like a sorority girl or something. Like she's pretty young.
Yeah. She's a child with her third baby, and she finds out it's a boy, and there's just this like moment where she has this look. She like looks at Dawn angry, and I was just like, Betty, come on, it's not his fault. And then she goes, I'm gonna name him Gene, and Dawn is like, oh, well, we'll discuss it. And then she's like, it's Gene. And he goes, no. But and then later Dawn gets a phone call from Roger Sterling, who's like, welcome back. Do you guys have a name yet? And he's like, no name. And then finally you see a short scene where Betty is getting the birth certificate, and yes, it is named Gene. For some reason, Dawn is like, thinks this is going to be up for discussion or whatever, and no, they're naming the child Gene, and he gets no say in it, which honestly, I think that's good. Not like he's going to raise it.
Yeah, they should let the nanny name it.
Yeah, exactly. Whoever's going to raise Carla should definitely name all of the Draper children. And then, you know, that storyline and the whole episode also ends here, but we have more story to talk about. It ends with Dawn and Betty are in bed, and then you hear a baby crying, and then Betty goes over to the newborn baby.
That was perfect because my wife was watching the episode with me, had fallen asleep, and then of course anytime like there's a baby crying on a show or movie, it wakes her up and she gets pissed. She's like, why do they put this in shows or movies?
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah, I get that.
Dude, I will say, as I was watching, you know, the scenes after the birth where he's like holding a baby and all that, there was like part of me that was like, oh man, I miss having a little baby, you know, because like I
do and I don't, because the toddler phase is like so gratifying in so many ways, like, because people talk about how they like remember the birth, and I do remember the birth, but like I feel like I'm more so than like my child being born. I feel like I remember like the first time my son like held my finger as we were like walking across the street,
and, or
like,
called you a racial slur.
Yeah, like for some reason, like that that sticks out.
My papa's a Wapdago. He eats like garlic.
A toddler sort of is aware of the world enough to like need you, and then
yes,
like that feeling of being necessary, like, is very
of course. I mean, obviously, I'm like, I 100% agree with you, but there is, you know, there's a part of me that was just like, you know, I'll look at pictures of Karina when she was a baby, and I'll be like, oh man, she was such a fucking cute baby, and then you hear that crying.
Yeah, and you're like, oh yeah.
And
no,
I
thanks.
Went, oh no, I'm getting a vasectomy. I'm getting a fucking vasectomy. No. It like brought me back to like the hell of newborn baby, in which you are just not sleeping.
You're not sleeping. Your wife's not sleeping. You both hate each other.
Everyone's mad.
Yeah, everyone's mad all the time.
Yes, all of the like good hormones from pregnancy are just all been depleted in one, you know, 24-hour period of like giving birth, and now everyone's angry. You got a crying baby who was just like, I'm essentially a parasite, feed me or I die, and you go to jail. So yeah, I the baby crying really woke me up too, Vince. I'll tell you what,
you got woke in that moment.
Brent, when are you gonna have a baby?
Not anytime soon, but aww. I don't know. You guys are making it sound sort of appealing.
Yeah.
You know, I want a little kid to call me a slur. That sounds nice.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's nice to have a little kid. I feel like almost the point of the prison guard character a little bit was that he is someone who his job is essentially to treat adults like children and for the rest of, you know, their lives. And he's just like, oh, I can't wait to have a child who I can also treat like this.
Yeah.
Like there's, I don't know, there's like part of me that was just like,
yeah, who I can also loom over.
Yeah. Yeah.
The threat of violence.
Yes. He's also in touch with the process of being human, like separate from capitalism. Whereas like Betty and Don have sort of, they've segregated themselves from that part. We're to the point where, you know, Betty's not going to breastfeed or anything. She's like, no, this is not for our class.
Right.
We're not in touch with the child rearing process. We sort of farm that out as much as possible.
Right.
Is that a class thing? The poor kids got the teat and the rich kids got the formula.
In the 60s, for sure.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like as soon as they
back in the olden times, if you were like an aristocrat, you had a wet nurse where poor person
somebody else's
like, do
milk.
The actual breastfeeding for you.
Oh, yeah,
damn,
you're right.
Crazy
that,
job.
That is crazy.
But then weren't they just filled with milk all the time?
Always with the milk? Always. Come in with the milk. Come in with the milk. You think Howard Hughes was raised by a wet nurse? It was probably telling her to come in with the milk.
Mm-hmm. We were the future.
We're the future. Show me all the blueprints. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened, but we were talking about milk, and I just thought about Sydney Sweeney. Oh,
that was a thought I had during this episode, during the dream sequence. If January Jones had been whatever age Sydney Sweeney is now, right now, she would have been the face of, like, I don't know, white nationalists.
That's,
you know, like, they would have thrust her into that. She's so blonde hair, blue eye.
That's
like,
true.
Perfect.
I
lady.
Think she's lucky in that sense. January Jones doesn't get to be forever memeified by someone who's going to do a school shooting. You know?
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Sorry. Okay. So can we go back to Admiral Television?
Do it, baby.
I didn't ask you to pull this clip. So like the storyline starts. They are Paul Kinsey is talking about Marx for some reason.
For some reason, because it's
classic.
Fucking Paul.
Well, that's all he Paul. Does.
Yeah, so then, they're talking about Marx. Pete's worried about the Admiral TV accounts. And then, what's-his-face, Kenny Cosgrove comes in.
Yeah.
And he just does this weird pitter-patter, skit-scat dialogue that I found basically mystifying. Did you understand what the hell he was talking about?
No,
there?
That was like when the teacher talks in Peanuts.
Like he said something about Bird's Eye and his mm-hmm. watch is Hamilton Electric. And mm-hmm.
I assume those are all, this is my guess, because he also has tickets to like Madison Square Garden or something.
Mets
no,
game.
To the Mets game. Yeah.
Mets game, that's what it was, Mets game. I assume these are all accounts that he has, and well, mm-hmm. you know, at the same time, it's to point out that Pete has, you know, all of the clunker accounts, you know.
Ah, okay.
He's stunting on Pete.
Yeah.
He's stunting on Pete, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, he's, before that, he's talking to Paul about Admiral, which is a TV brand. And they have this conversation.
There are some areas of growth. I mean, literally areas. Atlanta, Oakland, Chicago, Detroit, Newark, D.C.
Great jazz cities.
And I left out St. Louis and Kansas City, also growing. What does that mean?
Great jazz musicians.
Seriously, is it possible that these admirals are being bought by Negroes?
Lois Cotter's scarf putting paper in the Xerox.
Maybe when Joan leaves, I can finally get rid of her.
Can you pretend like you're back in the media department and tell me what this says to you? Look at the cities. Is it possible that Negroes are outbuying other people 2-1?
You could jump to that conclusion, I suppose.
I love that in this moment, Pete sees an open lane for a market. And that open lane is something he didn't see before because he was like surprised that black people in America have money. So it's like it comes from this like place of ignorance, but also place of excitement about exploiting this potentially open market.
Right. Well, it's the same thing when he tried to pull that with the Lucky Strike people, and he's like, you know, Freud says we have a death drive.
Right. Yes.
And it's like, mm-hmm. okay, just because you like have done some market research doesn't mean that's right. a good thing to like tell
yes.
the client.
Stop pitching fucking ad campaigns, Pete. Yeah. Like for him, it's this constant like, you know, seeing a way to make money but not knowing how to present it in a way that gets people to give you that money.
What we've found is that your brand is popular in the ghetto. So what we're going to do is
we're gonna
ghettoify your
yes,
brand.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Are you okay with that, Tommy Hilfiger? And it's so funny, that like connection, too, because it's just so... I remember when I was a kid, that story was insane. It was like... first time I had ever heard of, an openly racist person who was like so racist that he didn't want to make money if it meant...
like that fashion mm-hmm. designer racism.
Right. Like
that's like old school European style
right.
racism.
Because I think, wasn't it Tommy Hilfiger who was like mad that black people were buying his clothes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I had like never... even considered that level of racism before.
I vaguely remember like that being part of the impetus for FUBU, or I don't know if I'm misremembering that.
Well, it might have been. I don't know if it is, but FUBU is mentioned in this episode when he eventually does pitch to Admiral, and he talks about all of the what was it, Ebony magazine?
Yeah,
Ebony.
Yeah. It's like for us, it's, by us. Yeah.
But the difference between this and like the Lucky pitch is like, this is a good idea. This is a really good
idea.
Well,
but part of a good idea is that the people in charge of that brand are going to think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
That part is missing. Like, yes, it's going to make them money, but also they're going to hate it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he doesn't even consider the fact that like people would be mad about that, which I fucking I kind of love it. It endears you to him mm-hmm. because you realize that like, oh, yeah, I guess he kind of just assumed, like, for him, there's a ridiculousness to the levels of racism. I'll play the clip where he's actually doing the pitch.
This is Ebony. By Negroes, for Negroes.
So, Campbell, you're making...
I'm sorry. He's got to stop saying Negroes. There's something... the amount of times he says it in this episode is insane. And it's like, listen, it's of the time. I'm not saying, you know, anything by it, but it was just... it stuck out to me. I was like, man, he just says it. He says it a lot.
By Negroes, for Negroes.
So, Campbell, you're making twice the ads for us now.
No. Do them together. Integrated.
I don't think that's legal.
Of course it's legal.
I love that he has to explain that, like, you know, that integrating an ad is legal, which I assume it was. Was it?
Well,
legal?
I didn't entirely know what he meant by integrate them, like the actual ads themselves.
Yes,
or
would
like
have black people and white people in them buying TVs. Yes, that
together.
Together.
Really ahead of his time.
Totally.
If you watch ads now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, exactly. Now, you know, now it's all of them. I can't have an ad with just a nice white family anymore. There's got to be some light-skinned woman with an afro eating a yogurt with a spoon upside down. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. I just want to see white people eating mayonnaise with the spoon right side up. That's the America I remember. Hooah! Okay. So.
Oh, Al Pacino.
Yeah, so, hey, what's going on? I'm here in the Madman Show.
What other ads do you have?
Oh, I got an ad for the spearmint gum. Double mint gum. And now it's not two white ladies. One's black and one's white. They used to be twins. And they used to have a great ass. Gotta go.
Oh, he's leaving. Oh,
flat.
It seemed like he just got here.
It's my big suit. Flapping in the wind. I do love the scene in which he is talking with Hollis about, he's asking him questions about blacks and TVs. By the way, this entire like arc I've named Black Entertainment Televisions.
Poor Hollis. He's like, I feel like this is a trap. Something about this is a trap. And I'm not going to get caught in it.
I know. It you feel bad.
Not
for
today, Whitey.
Yeah. Exactly. The white devil.
It kind of perfectly encapsulates Pete's whole like race relation.
Yes.
Prism that he's looking at things through, where he's like, no, I want to talk. Like, I want to talk to you. Why are you being weird?
Right.
What is there, like, hundreds of years of oppression that might lead you to believe that I might have ulterior motives? Why are you being weird?
Yeah. And he's like, don't you know that you should treat each individual on the content of the character, not the color of their skin, even though this is a speech that was the speech given yet? Yeah, it was.
I think.
Have you heard the new speech? But yeah, he is treating it in this like way where he's like, no, I don't want to kill you. I just want to figure out how to get your money.
Yeah, I just want you and your family's money.
Yes, that's all I want. And I have that scene right here.
A lot of Negroes prefer Admiral.
I have an RCA.
So do your Negroes buy Admirals?
I'm sorry, sir. I can't really say.
This is important, and I'd really like to have a Negro's conversation with you.
I don't want to get into trouble.
It's just us. Negroes, and...
Mr. Campbell.
Do you think I'm a bigot? I just want to know why you Negroes bought your TV.
I don't even watch the damn thing. We've got bigger problems to worry about than TV, okay?
You're thinking about this in a very Negro's way.
Well, so...
Damn, he does say it a lot.
Doesn't
That's
he
crazy.
Say it a lot?
I didn't even remember so that much. He said
it's
it.
Kind of wild.
That's not how I remembered it. That's so weird.
No, that's how it goes. That's how it goes in the episode. But it is like, yeah, it's a great conversation. And I will say, and I didn't do any research on who wrote this episode or the writing staff of this show, but at first I was like, oh, this is a really interesting scene. The way, you know, in which it's the power dynamic is like so clear, like where he's like, you know, it's just you and me, Hollis, and he's like, Mr. Campbell, like, I can't even call you by your first name, motherfucker. And then when he finally is like, you know, listen, man, I don't even watch TV. Well, you know, we have more important things to deal with than TV. At that moment,
Pete's like, what? What are you talking about?
Well,
what do you guys like to do?
There was part of me that was like, he just said, I don't want to get into any trouble. And then he kind of snaps at him with like, we have more important things to do. And there was part of me that was like, it's a weird kind of like, heavy-handed moment there that I felt there was the caucasity came out of the script a little bit.
Didn't feel like it didn't feel like consistent.
That and the Medgar Evers things, it felt like they were kind of shoehorning in some civil rights stuff.
Yeah, and
they were like, look, we know we did a blackface episode 2 episodes ago. Please do not get mad at us.
Yeah, it did feel a little bit like that. And, you know, I think that obviously the Medgar Evers thing and Hollis's outburst is consistent, but it's just kind of like it's not consistent with the character in that moment. That felt a little bit like... like that sort of heavy-handedness, I felt like was came from a white writer's room.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, just because
Pete's doing the thing where he's like turning black people into a monolith.
Yes,
and then that line kind of is like,
right?
He's like, well, if you want me to speak for all black people,
yes,
I will,
like, but I will do it, you know, in the type of monolith that liberals like, which is like, but you. You just said you didn't want to, you know. Yeah. Anyways, didn't really. Whatever. Who cares? The point is he said that word a lot, and I did not like it.
did you notice that he also that one point Hollis says every job has its up and downs, but it's not a joke about being an elevator operator.
I thought it was though.
They don't. Neither of them act like it. Like it's in a very tense part of the conversation, and then Pete's like, "But you like baseball, right?" Like, I don't know. It felt like a missed opportunity to me.
I fucking loved it. I thought it was like, first of all, if I'm Pete, how are you not laughing at probably the greatest joke on the entire episode? You know, jobs have a lot of ups and downs. You're telling me I'm an elevator operator and I'm black in 1963. It was very funny. Great joke.
So that's that storyline. And then there's old Duck, who is
Duck Goose,
who's coming back into Mad Men, like he's Milhouse's divorced dad going through a midlife crisis. He's got turtlenecks now. He's working for Gray. I wasn't sure what Gray is, but based on context clues, I'm guessing that they're like the hip, like comedic advertising agency.
I thought the context clues were they were Jewish.
Jewish, yeah,
which may have been the hip thing. Back in the 60s.
Yeah, that hip new...
Because Pete has that line about, like, oh, what's that like? Everybody's walking around laughing all the time.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Which is, like, was not quite specific enough to tell me what he thought of that agency.
Yeah.
Right, and he also said...
I wasn't sure if it's like, oh, you guys are the funny agency, or, like, you guys are the white women laughing at salads agency. give me a little more on this.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was... with that one, I didn't know, but also... I thought the context clue of when he said, you know, hey, let's go have a nosh. He goes, nosh? You've been at Gray for one month and you already say nosh? And I was like, oh.
That's right. The nosh was the clue. Yeah.
So clearly this is a Jewish-run advertising agency. He calls him saying that he's his Uncle Herman, but he doesn't know Pete has an Uncle Herman. And he has like an entire... He's like freaked out because he thinks
Pete's response is so good.
Yeah,
he's such
your
a
Uncle
dork.
Herman is on the line. He won't leave a message.
Papa?
Uncle Herman? My goodness, is Aunt Alice all right?
Who is this?
It's Peter, Dottie's boy. You called me?
It's Duck. Duck Phillips.
Dottie's boy.
Sorry for the cloak and dagger. I didn't want to set off any alarm bells. My name is Herman. You know that.
Except that I actually have an Uncle Herman, and he's 91.
That's a sick joke. I apologize.
That's a sick joke.
But he's still got the stupid ducks on his wall.
Yeah. Well, you know, you name Duck, you forever be called Duck. I do like that he's like, Alice? Is Alice okay? She fall down a well?
Peter.
It's Peter.
Dottie's boy.
Did she get stuck in the laundry machine again? Remember, you have to fuck her out. I'm sorry. Sounded a lot more violent.
She's in the window pane. Now's your chance.
Anyways, so they go. He's like, "Hey, come out to a dinner, you know, and whatnot." And then he goes to the dinner and. Peggy's already there, and Pete has no interest in fucking, like, being... Because he's not being wooed alone. He's being wooed with Peggy. And I think Duck, who's not the smartest, thought that I can't convince Pete alone. I'll have to convince him with Peggy.
Well, he
with
was his also convinced
girlfriend.
Yeah, he was convinced that they were like in a relationship and not that they had like a secret baby and hated each other. Like he interpreted getting so Pete was kind of instrumental in getting Bill Murray's brother fired for pissing his pants.
Yeah.
And that got Peggy promoted. So he sort of interpreted that as something he did deliberately to help her out.
Right. And
Pete doesn't really do anything with that many steps to it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, he did not consider the fact that maybe Pete is just a pussy. Who was just like, I saw a man do something disgusting. He has no business being part of society. Yeah, so Pete is not interested in
That's
this.
Right, yeah. Duck was more the guy that got him fired. What's his name?
That got Freddie Rumsen fired.
Freddie Rumsen, well, yeah. That was kind of, yeah, wasn't...
Yeah, he's projecting. He's saying, like, you know, you helped her get a promotion because, you know, he got fired. And it's like, no, you got... You and Pete teamed up to get him fired, and it was mutually beneficial for both of you. You know, like the fact that it was also beneficial to Peggy, the only way in which it was beneficial was that I think Peggy happened to get some of his accounts and also like claimed his office. And
yeah,
and
I mean, it was beneficial to Peggy.
Right. But she didn't
do anything, but
yeah,
it,
she had nothing to do with
out.
It. But Pete doesn't like it.
She liked Freddie. Freddie was like the one who
believed
sort of
in
champion.
Her.
Yeah, he was the one who believed in her and was like, "Hey, you got something there."
Yeah, Pete. And she was very distraught at the fact that Pete and Duck were so willing to just like, you know, trash him,
kick him out. Yeah, I love it because it's just classic Duck where it's like he's almost right.
Yes,
like it's the same thing with the merger where he's like he's seeing some of these pieces.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, this will work out well for me, and it's like, no, you fucking idiot.
Well, nobody likes him.
He's kind of the grown-up Pete. I think that's why he treats Pete as a protege because they both have that same like ambition paired with like lack of guile.
Yeah, no riz.
Like Pete, like Duck is like reads the tea leaves and sort of gets them correct, but he has no riz, and so and then he's like, well, why? They're both doing the thing where they're like, why aren't you treating me like Don? And it's like, because you're not cool and handsome.
Yeah,
and you don't make people feel
you
comfortable.
Suck. And to be honest, there's just something about you I don't like. And there's a great scene where after, you know, he fucks up with Admiral and they're like, no, we don't want to do integrated, you know, ads. Roger's yelling at Pete and he goes like, you know, do you understand that like half of this business comes down to I just don't like that guy? And, you know, that's something that both Duck and Pete have in common is
which is also a little weird because that's not why the Admiral people don't like this ad. I think they're like,
well, no, I think he's saying like
just don't like a lot of guys.
Yeah.
A lot of specific types of guys.
They don't like a certain color of guy.
They just hear like Pete going like the Charlie Brown's teacher. And then it's like, hey, we want to make Admiral TV's the Colt 45 of televisions. And
right.
Like,
yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Right. Yeah. To them. Yeah. It's purely racialized, but they don't like Pete. It's not necessarily that they don't like Pete. I think in that case, he brings that up in the context of Pete saying like, oh no, am I off the account? As if like it couldn't have been so much worse. Like he's like, no, you're lucky we're not gonna be forced to fire you. Luckily Admiral isn't a big enough account, but if they were a big account and you did this shit, we might have to fire you because they're like, oh, I don't want to see that guy again. And that's
well,
going to come up.
He doesn't get that they don't like black people and they don't like Pete.
Right. Yeah. Yes. But it's an interesting point that Roger is making in that like this business is about like being likable. So you can have all of the like Machiavellian, you know, schemes that you want. But if you expect to be at the top of that, the clients at the end of the day have to think you're like cool. And if they don't, then you're fucked. So Pete leaves, Peggy sticks around, and then Duck proceeds to just gas her up to be like, man, you're so smart. You're so special. You deserve so much more. You know, strike while the iron's hot. And then she tries to ask for a raise, and immediately gets rejected.
You're so talented. You should strike while the iron's hot. You're a freewheeling career gal with great ideas. This is your time, Peggy.
Few moments later.
Well, you know, I'm paid very little.
It's not a good time.
He'll
still be alive
right now if you niggas ain't gassed him up. Yeah, shouldn't have gassed him up.
Have you ever taken career advice from someone who tells you the wrong thing?
God, have I? I can't remember a specific moment, but probably. Why? Have you?
I have. I mean, I'm not going to get into a whole personal anecdote about it, but
I would love it.
But I do like that, you know, Duck, again, he's not wrong. He's telling her, like, that she is worth more, and she is. And she probably could get a raise and a promotion. It's just like she has to wait a few more days to when Lane is not like banging on about like wasting paper and paper clips. So like Dawn is, if you're seeing this from Peggy's perspective, like Dawn is like undervaluing her, or at least that's how she's interpreting it. But like the reality is that he is in favor of her getting more money and more responsibilities, but he has what Pete and Duck don't have, which is like a sense of when to ask and timing in that way. And she doesn't. And since Dawn is incapable of like explaining anything that he says, like it doesn't get conveyed to her in the right way.
Right. And beyond that, he says no.
I'll give you a low stakes personal anecdote of this is when I was playing rugby for Olympic Club and there was one point where like I hadn't been in the game and I was kind of just like waiting to go in, and it seemed like the coach sort of forgot about me, and like all these guys are like, oh, I think he just forgot, like you go tell coach that you want to go in. And so I did, and I immediately got chewed out where he was like, I'll tell you when you go in, go shut up and sit down, kind of thing like that. And I was like, okay, yeah. I don't know, all these four other guys that haven't played with you longer told
damn
me to tell you.
That's fucked up. You know what they say about that?
He'll still be alive right now if you niggas ain't gas him up.
Yeah.
And everybody saw it. It was pretty funny. They were like, oh, yeah, sorry, our bad on that one.
Yeah. Sorry for gassing you up. You'd still be alive today if we hadn't. Yeah. No, I was going to say that Peggy also made the mistake of not selling it. I think that, like, Dawn... well, no, because the moment that Dawn chose to say, now's not the right time, was immediately after she had not said, I want a raise. She said, I don't make that much money. And also my secretary doesn't respect me. And he's like, I'll get you a cheaper secretary. And and then she's like, oh, and also there was a Supreme Court ruling that says men and women are supposed to be paid the same. And at that moment, he gives this look and he goes, it's not the right time. And I think part of that, yes, maybe a majority, is the fact that Lane is, you know, he's like pinching pennies for pencils. But also, it's not the right time, as in, like, well, you couldn't sell me on you getting a raise, and that's your job. You know, like, advertising is your job. Instead, what you did was browbeat me and then like, beat around the bush. You know, like, didn't say, I want a raise. And she's like, I don't think it could have been any clearer. And it's like, actually, you could have. You could have said, I would like a raise, and explained reasons why, rather than saying, because it's the law now. And it's not that she's wrong. Paul should not be getting the same as her.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you need to make me feel like this was my idea and not that it was the Supreme Court's idea.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, in that moment, he is, you know, he's being a little bitchy about it. Like, he's definitely being kind of, you know, he's being pissy, but he's I think giving a pretty clear signal that half of the issue he has is the fact that she didn't sell him. And
I didn't read it like that initially, but I'll buy that.
Yeah. Well, see that. Like, I sold it. Yeah. Why can't you?
Good job. Go to the head of the advertising agency.
Yeah. Hey, Don Draper, after you're done screwing your secretary, could I have more monies? So then the execs yell at Pete. Lane says, you know, now that we're done with the flogging, P- Pete's idea is kind of fascinating. There is an open market. I'm an outsider, but there's something happening here, and what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I've got to beware. And he just starts singing the Buffalo Springfield song, and it's like, what? And yeah, that's it. That's the whole episode.
That's the whole episode.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Do we have a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about?
No, I think we covered it all.
I think we did, too.
I liked Duck's stupid little turtleneck.
Yeah, you should wear a duck neck, am I right? Brent, favorite, least favorite, something we didn't talk about.
I think we covered it pretty well.
Yes,
but I did.
Roger
is being very funny when he's ripping into Pete, and then when he says, when someone says, like, is the flogging over? And he's like, it's never as good as you think it's going
to be. Yeah, that was great.
Great Roger line.
Yeah. And if I had to give this episode a letter grade, you know what? I'm going to give this a P+.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a B+. Solid one.
Oh. And Brent, what did you give this episode?
I thought about it a lot. B+.
Wow. So we got two B+s and one P+. And if you're wondering what that is, of course...
Pencils, pens, pads, paper, and postage.
And penis! And all those added together, solid B+ episode of Mad Men, and a solid A+++++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Brent Flyberg, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us.
Of course, great to be here.
Oh my God, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram. It's at Brent Flyberg. You can listen to my podcast. It's called Oh Hell Yeah. Or come watch. If you live in LA, come watch me. Follow me on Instagram. Come watch me do a show.
Follow him. Links will be in the descrippy script, and I say that knowing full well that Brent will put them in the descrippy script. By the way, Brent,
you're damn right.
You write the best episode descriptions in the game, and it's I think you're the unsung hero of episode descriptions.
I appreciate that.
They are all.
I do work hard on them. You work sometimes. I feel like too hard.
Dude, they're so good.
Okay,
like,
thank you.
And you know, if at any point you're like, I don't need to work this hard on them, you don't have to. But okay. I like them a lot. So if you want to keep doing it, please do it.
As long as they're appreciated, you know?
They're appreciated. I'll do them. They're appreciated by me and by Vince and by our listeners.
Yes, very much.
Absolutely. Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken, 60s guy. Patreon.com/records. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. This week, we have three names, Vince. Are you ready?
Oh, boy. I am so ready.
Okay, we're going to give those names. First one is... Pedro or Liana or Oriana.
Oh, Pedro. We call this guy Pete the Meat.
Pete the Meat. You can't Pete our meat. At Pedro Burger. Okay. Next is just Sydney. I couldn't find the last name. That's what it says on Patreon. Sydney with a Y. I can only assume it's Sydney Sweeney. So, Sydney.
We call Sydney the knife, because that's not a knife.
Oh, yeah.
This is a knife.
Oh.
She's from Sydney. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, no, no. I get it. Yeah, because, you know, it's... Anyways. Okay, Sydney, the knife. You could get in off at P. Sherman 42 Wallaby Way. Sydney. There we go.
That's good. It's a great pull.
Thank you. And finally, Kieran Murphy.
Oh, we call this guy, you know, he wants us to call him Murphy's Irish Stout, but we're going to call him Guinness. That's the other one. That's,
oh.
The other black beer.
Oh, yes. Guinness, if you want to make a world record for who hits the most Dawes, then whoever, the world record for who made it fight the most Dawes, call up Guinness. Kieran Murphy. All right, I'm losing steam, guys.
He's running out of steam. We got to recharge, man.
Okay, I need more coal. And
see,
that,
this is what happens when we don't let him do a parody song.
He's all wired. He's all wound up.
I'm all wound up. I need to get listen to the Hot for Teacher parody song in full, which I'm about to. But first, I got to say, patreon.com/broadcast, $8 tier. Get your shout out. If you haven't heard your name, let us know. broadcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you.
Oh, wow, man. I said, wait a second, man. What do you think Sally's teacher's gonna look like this year? Whoa! But Betty, stop that scream, man! Betty, don't you see me? Uptown girl is some fool. Maybe God should go to hell, but he is doing well. Teacher needs to go in after school. That girl's a bruiser. John's got it bad, so bad, he's hot for teacher. Admiral, who's buying TVs? Lane, give me a pencil. Something to write on, man. Oh! Hot for teacher. Betty drinks dead. Don't hot for teacher. Went to Mama Leone's? Dr. Mendelowitz? Don's got it bad, racism bad, Don's got it bad. He's hot for teacher.
Oh, really, it's so fucking hot in my apartment. Oh my god.
Question for all of you guys. Sorry, I'm getting to the point where I'm like, should I just start from here, like at the end, so that people don't have to listen to the full thing?
I say let it rip.
I don't know.
You say let it rip?
Yeah.
All right.
People like repetition. That's what the fast forward button exists for.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Okay. I'm gonna. You just add it in post. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I can't listen to it again. Yourself, man.